How are you doing tonight?
Dave, man, I'm doing wonderful. Life is going great. I'm just happy to be alive. How about you?
You look great. I feel great. I think my anal itch is starting to fade. Feeling better.
Nice.
Getting through the winter. It was a long 6 weeks.
Yeah, the glands are back producing normally, huh?
Yeah, it's easier to maintain hydration, I think. Just feeling good. But still, even better news. My sister's here tonight.
What?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
Melissa, so good to see half of your face again.
It's been a while. I remember those 2 or 3 times I met you before.
I know it was more than a decade ago, I think.
Wow. Yeah, I think it really was.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys met or when, but I'm just glad it happened and we're able to do the reunion a decade later.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I'm excited my sister's here. We've got a lot to talk about with her. But I just helped put my girls to bed. What you guys been doing?
Same.
Same. Yeah. Doing it solo. What about you guys?
My wife was home, but she pretended to leave while my son was in the bath so I could put him down without him wanting her.
Gotcha.
Good move. That's solid.
Yeah. So she
How'd
puts
that
her
work
coat on.
out?
She's like, "Okay, I'm leaving. See you in the morning." And then I close the door and she just goes in the other room and shuts it. So, yeah.
Well, my wife is heavy with children, so and the girls sleep upstairs now, so most nights I just put them to bed by myself. But it's been a pretty big controversy for like 2 months. Every night, almost every night, Mabel, once I close the door, will yell for like 20 minutes for mama to come up. And I just have to go in and be like, she's not coming, Mabel. I don't know what to tell you.
Is there any variety in what she yells, Dave, or is it just the same thing over and over?
No, she'll mix it up. There'll be different reasons, drink of water,
I see.
different issues, but the number one reason is she wants a little girl story from her mama, and I can't provide that. I can't do it.
Cedar wants to nurse primarily, which is also something I can't do. So he'll say nurse, nurse, and I'm like, well, can't do that, but in the morning when the sun comes up, you can nurse. So it seems to placate him. He likes to read Richard Scarry books with me right before he falls asleep, which is awesome. Tonight, he basically had fallen asleep, and I take him into his room, lay him down on his bed, and he gets up, looks around, and says, "Book, book." He made me bring the book in the other room, and it had to be visible in sight. So he's laying down, face down on the bed, and every couple seconds he'd open his eyes and look and make sure he could see the book. And then say, "Book, book," and then he would fall asleep. Like, the book had to be visible. Like, even though he had his eyes closed, he had to know that the book was there in case he did open his eyes, or else he wouldn't sleep. It was awesome.
How's the solo bedtime work, sis?
It does not work very well. Usually I'm trying to put down the baby while the other two, like, I always have this idea that they're going to take care of each other or something. It never works. Like, actually, no, once or twice it has worked. Like, Adele has read Colin a bedtime story. But usually it's mayhem and screaming and, like, yeah, keeping the baby awake when I'm trying to put her to sleep. So, yeah, it doesn't work very well. But 2 hours later, yeah.
What's the age spread for you right now?
We've got a 6-year-old and a three, almost 4-year-old. He'll be 4 in a month, and a 1-year-old.
Wow.
It's beautiful. I really like bedtime. I've mentioned before that I tell stories at night, but I've been telling like epically nerdy ones lately. Like we took about a week telling Dune a couple weeks ago, and everybody knows about sandworms now, and it was awesome.
So, when you're telling an epic story, how do you end it for the night? Do you say there'll be more coming tomorrow, or do they just fall asleep and you pick up where you left off, or like, what's your stopping point strategy?
you know, the natural beats of the story give you where to stop. And then I stop and I'm like, and then tomorrow night we're going to talk about when Paul first wrote a sandworm. And everyone's like, holy crap. Like, can't please tell us more tonight. And I always have to tell them just a little bit more. And then that usually satiates them. Although I think last night Mabel's fit was mostly about the fact that I stopped Star Wars right when I did. She wanted to hear a little bit more about Han Solo. He was frozen in carbonite and she didn't know what was going to happen.
See, that's the dangerous part. If you tell a really good story, you just can't stop. You got to tell one that, I don't know. Seems dangerous. The part that I've loved about it, Dave, is the physical connection I get to have with Cedar right when he's falling asleep, because nursing the sleep is clearly an intimate physical connection with his mom, but for me, I'll have him sit on my lap and we'll read together, and he will stroke the hair on my wrist, you know, and then I'll have him lean back so his head's against me, and I just get to nestle like my cheek right against the back of his ear, and we'll like be breathing together, and he's just slowly drifting off to sleep, and it's beautiful. And then right when I can tell he's really tired, I'll say, Cedar, do you want to give Dad a big hug? And then that's when he'll turn around and just become a sack of potatoes, and he'll let me carry him into the room. And like, it's sweet because a lot of times he's active and wild and you have the physical contact when you're reading with them. But when they're falling asleep, it's different because they're just trusting themselves into sleep. And I don't know, it's some of the tenderest, sweetest moments for me as a parent that I can imagine, because we're not really speaking much. We're just slipping to sleep. And it reminds me of him being an infant again a little bit. I love it.
It's just fun. And we've associated music with it frequently, like songs and singing. We've talked about that before. Sisty, do you or does your husband sing songs to the kids to put them to bed?
Yeah, we used to do that all the time. In fact, we had like the repertoire. We had this thing we did every single night with Adele, like the same two songs every night. And it always ended the same way. And like for years, until one night she was like, I don't want that anymore.
Wow.
But then we started doing it with Colin for a while. And like, I think they just eventually grow out of it. I don't know. Every once in a while, Adele will ask for a song again, because now she's old enough where like it's fun for her to like remember what it was like to be a baby. Well, she don't really remember, but like pretend that she's a baby and she, I don't know, mommy takes care of her just like she does the baby. And we always used to sing two like Beatles songs, like the what is it, the Goodnight one that
now is it Golden Slumbers?
Time to say. I don't know what that song's called, but that's
and
the
then
best.
Golden Slumbers.
Have either of your kids been scared of the dark?
I don't know if my kids are really scared of the dark or if they're just like, yeah, I don't want to go to bed yet. So
that's what I'm trying to figure out right now, whether it's a stalling thing or whether it's a legit fear.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
I don't know. We've got like three kids in one room. Maybe they don't get scared.
Yeah, whenever they do get scared, I tell them, like, your sisters are in here. Just talk to your sisters. And sometimes they'll just talk to each other. The cutest is when they'll start singing with each other, and they'll all three be singing some song without much of a tune, but they're all singing the same one. It's just fantastic.
Oh man, Dave, we need a little bit of recording of that for like the intro music to the show.
I'll see what I can do. But now we better get into the meat of the show, because I'm pretty excited.
Okay.
I got a new segment that I came up with that actually I stole from another podcast, but I feel okay about it. Do you ever listen to Bill Simmons? You know him? Steel?
Yeah, I used to listen to his podcast, but I haven't since he moved over to the new provider.
Yeah, so this is a segment he used to do on his old show, kind of about, he'd have a friend of his come on and just talk about goofy ideas.
Half-baked.
Yes, and I've stolen the segment. We're going to talk about interesting ideas. We've all brought some good ones to the table. Wait, Steel, why don't you start off with
This is one that came out of the early postpartum days, you know, like Cedar would go to sleep and Laurel and I would have like an hour to talk before we fell asleep, and we'd just be laying in bed talking, and you get these weird ideas, you're sleep deprived and you just think this stuff is hilarious, that in the cold light of daylight it's like a terrible idea. And our best idea, you know, like Laurel was feeling like, her body had changed, and she was like, "Ah, it's so frustrating, so annoying." And so we thought, why don't we start a clothing store for moms? And so it's an oversized dress store, like a plus-size dress store, and it's going to be called Go Big or Go Home, Mom. And that was just a great idea. Like, you go get your plus-size post-maternity clothes at Go Big or Go Home, Mom. And I think it might have even been called Go Big or Go Home, Big Mom, but I can't remember if we repeated big in the title. But anyway, we laughed about that for like a week straight, and that was what we'd always talk about. Go Big or Go Home, Mom, as like our next business that was going to make our first million for us.
Any thoughts, sis? Would you head to Go Big or Go Home, Mom?
I don't generally have the energy to like head anywhere in the early stages, but
what if it was a cool website?
Oh yeah, website.
Right? That's what you got to do, the online thing. Yeah, I would order some. I'm assuming these are Moomoos we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, plus size mom clothes. Hello.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might order some if I probably not, but you know, you never know.
Go big or go home, hey, Mom. Think of the bumper sticker.
Go home or go big, mom.com. You got a little rhyme there too. It's great.
There you go.
So Steel is accepting investors into this idea. If anybody wants to jump in, they're welcome to do so. I think that the internet, I think making it internet based is probably the plan you got to do. Yeah. No one's going brick and mortar anymore.
True.
Well, guys, I got an idea for a business that is very much brick and mortar. This is not going to work. Online, I want you to picture a car wash.
Yeah, love it.
Like one of those ones you're driving through, the wheel locks and it kind of rolls you through, and you got the stages. At first it sprays you, then it comes in with the soap, and the big kind of blue brushes are scrubbing it, and then you come in the other side, it sprays, then you get the wax sprayed on, all these things. Now picture that, except picture it with a human being.
Oh, yeah.
And wow. You just walk in, you step on the conveyor belt you're going through, you get rinsed, you get a nice soap, a nice lather, the brushes come in, and when you go to the other side, you can choose what you want. You can choose, you're choosing lotion, you can get a spray tan, anything that you're interested in, this thing can make happen. Dryers, you come out the other side, body wash.
So, Dave, human attendants or robots doing the cleaning?
Robots, come on.
Okay. So I was thinking you could get, like, midgets, human attendants. Cute.
That's not going to work. Nah, you get shower time, personal time, right? I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know that you want to invite people in there. But robots. What?
Discreet midgets.
Yeah, I think that could be in the title of the business, Discreet Midget Showers.
.com.
Yeah. Actually, if it were, if the people in there were Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining. The spray tan thing got me thinking that track. But yeah, so body wash, I like it.
Both of these first two ideas, I think, are kind of offensive. This one's super offensive.
Okay. So. Nice.
Keep going with it.
I'm not the one that brought the Oompa Loompas into it.
I thought you were going to say your idea that you were going to suggest is super offensive. That was like the segue for your idea. I was really excited.
Well, I probably have to. Yeah, no, mine are not quite as offensive. We might be able to make them a little bit offensive, though.
No, well, let's hear one. It doesn't have to be offensive, but give us a good idea. We need to see how the pros do it.
Well, no, that is not me. But I was thinking about this because we had some puking going on around here in the last couple days. Last week, I was thinking about stay-at-home parent sick days. The thing about staying home with your kids, you get sick, you just got to deal with it, and you got to take care of kids. You're sick at the same time, and you don't get to take care of yourself. So I thought maybe you could have a service where you call in sick, be like, yep, I'm calling in sick today. I'm phoning it in. I am not taking care of the kids, and they send you a replacement for the day. And then it could be like a pool. Everyone has to take their turn. So you could go, like, you would have to show up for other people's kids on another day, I guess.
Wait. So when you're talking about calling in sick, you're talking about calling in sick from parenting for the day.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that is such an attractive idea. As long as you didn't have to do shifts with other people's kids, it would be a total winner.
Yeah, I know. That's the bad thing, but I don't know how it's going to work otherwise. Like, who are they going to get to do this? I guess
it's really got to be the co-op model is a good way for it to work.
I'll give you two words: discreet midgets.
Seriously, we just solved the discreet midget unemployment problem in this country. We got two businesses that can end this chronic underemployment among discreet midgets. So there you go. You brought us a good idea, and we made it great, Melissa.
That's what we do with off-the-chain ideas. We take an idea that's pretty good, and then we add someone discreet to it.
So I've got another good business idea.
This one's called
Burn One Down. It's a business that I think could be started. Lately, one of the trends in the United States has been legalization of marijuana. And that's nice and all, but I think we really want to do more entrepreneurial. Like, one of the side effects of intoxication is enhanced creativity for some people. And so here's the idea. It's like a hookah shop with like a Build-A-Bear type concept bolted on. So instead of going to the shop and like building a bear or like making a ceramic pot, what you do is you go to this hookah shop and you can choose whether you want to go the R&B hip hop route or the country music route, depending on what style of music you want to make. And so either there's going to be a member of the Wu-Tang Clan or like Willie Nelson will be there. And so you go and you go to the hookah shop, you smoke weed with them for a couple hours, and then as soon as everybody's sufficiently intoxicated, you go straight into recording booth and you just record some extemporaneous music. And then you get to take like a custom CD home with you. You do karaoke. So it's like karaoke mixed with a hookah shop. And you pay like added fee because it's like an all-day experience. So you get a brush with a celebrity, you get high with a celebrity, and you go home with a CD mix of karaoke music you made with them.
I'm hugely in favor of any way you can brush shoulders with a celebrity. We got to bring the people together, the common people with the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
I don't even bring Willie Nelson into it. You had me at Wu-Tang. That's
okay, I was just trying to think of like diversifying the... But I think, yeah, Wu-Tang's good enough. I was thinking of that Martin Shkreli guy, you know, that terrible person that was that bought the Wu-Tang album, and he also jacked up the price of the AIDS drugs or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about him. Like, he would definitely pay millions of dollars for this. And there's probably a lot of dudes, like venture capital bros out there that think of themselves as like freestyle rappers and that love to smoke weed, you know? They need to be parted from their money, and this would be a good way to do it.
Call up members of the Wu-Tang Clan, and I think you got yourself a business plan.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think you got it figured out. That's a good one.
Recording engineers, obviously discreet midgets for that one. They're in the booth.
Is there anything those guys can't do? That's
no.
My question.
No. Who else has got a good idea?
Oh, man. If you want me to piggyback off of the celebrity thing, I will, because I'm more than happy to.
I do.
So, again, I want to bring together these two worlds, celebrity and me. And what better face of this than Kevin Costner?
Oh, yeah.
So I want to set up a service in partnership with Kevin Costner. You pay a nominal fee, you join, and you're able to then share in a Skype conversation with, get this, Kevin Costner.
Is it like dial a Costner, or he's having a Skype conversation with someone else and you're listening in, or you're like a third party?
No, you get to talk to Kevin Costner. You get to ask him all the questions you've ever wanted to ask. Like, about Waterworld. Like, how'd you put the gills behind your ears? Like, why did you decide to make Waterworld? Any number of questions. And ideally, as this begins to grow, we'll get other celebrities in. We get Travolta. We get Samuel L. Jackson. We just get a whole host of them. And you pay your fee. You join the membership service. monthly fee, you're able to have a conversation with Kevin Costner once a month.
You know who I'd join for? If you could get Joan Cusack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's already signed up.
Oh,
she's already in.
I'm in. That's a brilliant idea. She'd be cool.
Sis, who would it take to get you in on this?
Oh, man. I don't know. Who would I like to talk to? I don't know why. I don't know why this just came in my head. But for some reason, the big guy from Blues Traveler, I have no idea.
John Popper.
Yeah, that's the one.
Talk about a in-demand celebrity. He'll be tough to book, I think, Melissa.
I think he's listening to this conversation right now, and he just signed up. He's in. I don't know how Popper even heard this, but he's in. He just sent me an email.
It's like, this is your life. Are you ready, Melissa? We're going to bring John Popper in on the call, and he's here to meet you right now. Wow. That would be great. John Popper, Joan Cusack, Kevin Costner, talk to one of them, celebrity service.
Done. Yeah. Dial a Costner is what it's called, I believe.
Nice.
And yeah, we need no small people to run this.
I was trying to think about what fits in with these amazing experiential business plans, and I don't really have one, except maybe the haircut hologram idea. So you know how they have like those apps and websites, whatever, you like upload your picture,
yeah,
and you can put like a stupid haircut on there and see like what you look like with different haircuts. So I feel like that's not enough. You don't really get the idea. So to really truly experience what a different haircut would be like, you'd have, I mean, I'm sure the technology is out there. Do I have it? No, but someone probably does, to be able to create like a haircut hologram so that you could walk around with, you know, like a, I don't even know what to call that, a hologram of a different haircut so you could try it out.
That's a great idea. That's a legitimately good idea. Both of your ideas have been actual good ideas. They're less than half baked. They're fully baked.
Yeah, you go to the hair salon, the fancy salon, and you say, I want to do like the Rachel, the famous 90s haircut from Friends, and boom, it's on. And you get to look in the mirror and kind of test it out.
Dave, you do it at home and you walk into the hair salon and say, give me this cut. And they study it for a while, turn the hologram off, and then they just replicate it.
Or, hey, if we want to take it to the next level, boom, you just hologram wigs. You can change your hair at any moment because it's just a hologram.
Wow.
Wow, this totally reminds me of, I probably shouldn't say this, of a Bart movie I once watched with my daughter where she had the magic to change her hairstyle in any second.
Dang. Classic of modern filmmaking, it sounds like.
Yeah. She's pushing the boundaries. That's good Barbie.
That's great magic.
Barbie had always something about, you know, hair or fashion.
It's often been said that the humanity's best ideas come from Barbie movies.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
Something like that. All right, Dave, I got one more idea for you.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
I know you're a big sports fan.
Oh, yeah, I love them.
And basketball is a great sport, but there's a problem with the game. Splash Brothers.
Oh, yeah?
They're the big problem. And if you watch college basketball, all it is guys jacking up three-pointers. It's just, it's a game where short white guys can sometimes be the most valuable guys in the game. And that's just not what basketball is meant to be. Basketball is meant to be great athletes.
They're just chucking. People are just chucking. A bunch of chuckers out there.
You don't want chuckers. So here we change the rules.
Okay.
Instead of a long-distance shot being worth 3 points, we're like, no. Long-distance shot is worth 1 point because it's far away. A regular shot's worth 2 points. If you dunk the ball, that's a three-pointer because dunking is awesome and it's hard. Dunking is worth three. And if you dunk on someone who is over, say, like 8 inches or a foot taller than you, it's worth 4 points. And if you dunk, like if Spud Webb dunks over Manute Bol, he's allowed to ride on the guy's back for up to 30 seconds following the dunk in game action.
And please tell me there's like a siren that's going off. That's
yeah.
What I also need a siren.
Of course there is. Like strobe lights and a siren and like confetti rains down with the snapshots, Polaroid snapshots of the dunk.
Oh man. DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
They're already in. They've already joined this league. They're done.
So what the game becomes is like short, like Nate Robinson assaulting the rim over and over, trying to dunk over huge guys. Because when he does, it's worth 4 points. Furious comeback late in the game. Tiny guy trying to dunk over a huge guy. It would just be awesome. Basketball would be so fun.
Yeah, right now it's just a bunch of guys cutting, running around, not touching each other, chucking the ball from far away. That, no one wants to see that. People want to see the dunk contest just happened this last weekend, and people loved it. They were jumping over like jumping over everything, and people loved it.
And it'd sort of be like every once in a while, like there'd be a 2-minute period at the end of each quarter when you could involve mascots and trampolines in your dunk. The acrobatics.
Oh, man.
That'd be fun. Think about it.
I love it. Yeah. Take it to Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. I think he might give it a whirl. Think about it some.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Well, guys, I've got one more. This isn't necessarily a business, but this is a fantastic idea. A sitcom. Picture this sitcom. Strip mall. Strip mall from, you know, built in like the 90s. Not the nicest strip mall ever.
I'm sold. I'm sold. When can I watch it?
Next year, hopefully, once I get my deal signed.
Oh, wait, there's more?
Yeah, there's more to it. So strip mall, so, you know, there's two main stores it takes place in, kind of comedy, but then there's a third store in the strip mall that every week it's a new store. The store keeps going out of business. So it's always a new guy with this new wild idea. You know, he's selling, you know, milkshakes to dogs. And the next week, whatever. And it just keeps not working out. So the two owners of the main stores are like always joking, like, yeah, this isn't going to work out. And
the owners are a body wash and go big or go home, mom.
Oh, I hope so. And just the hijinks, it's endless. You know, jokes, teeping the store after dark, accidentally setting off the fire alarm. Like, I've already written the first season right here. It's in my head. Done.
And instead of, like, special Christmas episodes, you could do a special Black Friday episode, special President's Day sale episode. You do all the classic days in the strip mall history.
Yeah, because what do we see on TV? We see cop shows. We see doctor shows. That's the two kind of shows we see. Why not? There's room for a strip mall.
Yeah. Going out of business sales. They don't get enough love on TV these days.
No. Wait, would you watch this, sis? Are you in? It's called Strip
Yeah,
Mall.
I think I would. I think I would give it a, you know, a couple tries for sure. Yeah. Out there, man.
You sound about as committal as the rest of our family does to listening to this podcast. Like, oh, you have a podcast? I might listen to that sometime.
I never thought you'd do anything with your life, Dave. Guess I was right.
Oh, man. About to get them on the podcast. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I think you're the only one that's ever listened to it, so that's why you're on, sis. You made the cut by agreeing to listen to it.
All right. That's what it takes.
I'm pretty sure none of my sisters even know I do this. All right, Melissa, I loved your last idea. I want you to tell me in great detail about how this might work.
Oh, I thought about this for like 2 seconds, but I'm glad that you loved it. So this idea comes from a history that I have of falling asleep places that I should not fall asleep. Mm. You know, from class, yeah, when I was in, you know, high school, college, to one time I actually got fired from, luckily it was just like a short-term job, but for falling meeting. this has been a problem throughout my life. I don't know if it's narcolepsy. I think not. I think I just get tired and I go to sleep.
Behind the wheel, taking the kids to school. Boom. Next thing you know, you're in Maryland.
Yeah. Thankfully, yeah, there have not been any major accidents. But anyway, my idea was that you could tattoo very realistic looking eyeballs onto your eyelids. So you can fall asleep and nobody knows. You know, and I wouldn't have gotten fired from my temp job if I'd had that.
The thing that I love about this is that for other people, this would be one of the creepiest, most terrifying things possible. But for you yourself, it would be total, except for the pain of the tattoo, it wouldn't affect you at all. It'd be awesome. You would never even know, like, you looked super freaky crazy when you were asleep. It's amazing.
Guys, I think this was a very successful off-the-chain ideas. If anyone wants to steal these ideas, please don't. I think that we're going to make a lot of money off of them. And they're documented here. It's documented that these are our ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave, I think we should call this off-the-chain Shark Tank.
Okay, done. That sounds very original. Where'd you come up with that one?
Just thought of it.
Oh, cool. Well, sis, we got you here. You're an expert in a number of different subjects, and so we wanted to talk to you about some of these.
All right, let's do it.
This is expert testimony, Melissa. You're our expert.
Oh, no. All right, no, I'm ready.
All right. So from what I understand, you are a mother. So one of your areas of expertise is mothering.
What's that?
First question, what got you into mothering?
Besides this?
It all started with an ejaculation, Dave.
No, no.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure Dave didn't want to go there. But we'll just say children. We'll just fast forward and say children got me into mothering. But no, I mean, I always wanted to be a mom when I was a kid. When I was like 10, I thought that I would have like 10 children. I thought, well, that'd be so cool. I'm just a ton of kids. And then, you know, I slowly whittled that down as I grew older. But I think 3 is probably perfect for me. But, you know, not putting that in stone quite yet. Hmm. But, I wanted to be a mom. And also the job that I had, I did not like at all. So that wasn't holding me back. So, yeah.
When you were a kid, did you feel in any way like you were, because you're Dave's big sister, was having a little brother, did you feel like a mini mom as a child growing up?
No, because, I mean, Dave is like less than 2 years younger than me.
Oh, okay, there's not enough of an age gap.
Yeah, so I was more the, we want to talk about my childhood, we probably don't want to go that path, but I was more like just feeling left out all the time because I had 3 brothers. It was sad. But anyway, so I probably created, an active imaginary world in which I was a mother to my dolls. So,
So it all began there.
Follow up question to these: how do you feel mothering is different from fathering? Something that both me and Steele are pretty familiar with.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I would love to get your feedback on this question also, what you feel. I don't know that it's a mother versus fathers. Like, I don't know that there's always – it's like a set in stone, like all you – know, certainly not all mothers are one way and all fathers are one way. I can really only speak for myself, but I think there might be some generalizations you can draw. I feel like definitely in our family, the dad is like the Mr. Fun guy. Like, the dad comes home and we get to climb all over him and he throws us in the air and that kind of stuff. And mom is the one that comforts them when they get hurt, takes care of them when they're sick. And I think there is a little bit of a, like, you know, biological reason for this, because the mom is the one that, you know, can is able to nurse the babies from the beginning. So right. I think they, you know, so you kind of establish that, you know, this is the primary, like, caretaker, the person that makes sure that their needs are met and that sort of thing. So I do feel like those roles tend to happen more often. It might be different, though, in a scenario where, you know, the primary caregiver is the father. I don't actually know. But that's probably one of the obvious differences to me. And I also think that probably we worry about different things, certainly in our family. Like, the kinds of things that, like, I have anxiety over are different than the kinds of things that, like, Chris has anxiety over, I think.
What's an example, and, Melissa?
Well, I mean, I'm always doing all kinds of research about, like, what should we get involved in? What should we, like, I don't know, basically, what are all the things I can do to raise these kids right, you know, and to either, like, get them to take a class or get them to, I don't know. I mean, I read, like, a million parenting books. I kind of hate them all now, but I read them in the first place. I mean, I can't really speak for Chris, but I know he doesn't spend the time doing those things. Hmm. And yeah. So
is your worry about, like, not doing it right, or that they're missing out on something if you don't?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, probably early on I did have that worry, but then I got to the point where, you know, I mean, I guess it's only 6 years. It's not a ton of time that I've been a mom, but I got to the point where I was like, whatever. Like, I'm just going to do it my way, whatever. I don't care what the books say or anything like that. But I do, just basic what hopes for your kids. Like, I just want them to fulfill their potential. I want them to be the best version of themselves they can. And I just want to give them all the opportunities for that. And that's pretty much all it is.
I was going to ask both of you, because I think I only have a son and Dave's only got daughters right now. Do you feel like your worries differ based on the gender of your kids?
I think a little bit, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have two girls and one boy, so I definitely, I don't know. I think I think more about the future related to my girls, just because I've had the experience of growing up as a girl and becoming a woman, and I think about what they're going to go through,
right?
Based on what I went through, and I think about how I can prepare them for that. But I think there are certain things that are super important to instill in both my girls and my little boy, and they're the same thing, you know, like respect for women, either, you know, respect for yourself or respect for other women. And I don't know, the way that I worry probably is different, but the basic, you know, I just want them all to be good people in the end.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a little bit because Dave and I have talked about, like, imagining our kids dating and, like, how much of a terrifying thought that is. Like, Dave just immediately is like, oh, no.
I won't do it. No, I'm not going to imagine that.
Like, and for me, I think about my son and him growing up, and I worry most about him hurting other people or hurting women if he decides to date women or whatever, you know, like hurting, and rather than being hurt or wounding, just because I think the world is kind of rigged or stacked in certain ways against women, particularly like in teen years. And I imagine that if I had a daughter, I think I would worry more about her being hurt and being wounded by boys or by men than I do. Like, I worry about it from the other way as for my son. And I know that's not, I think there's some gender bias built into there, certainly, but that's just how I feel right now as I think about what I'm worried about for my son versus what I imagine being worried about if I had a daughter.
And I think worries will obviously change as kids age. I feel like they'll diverge more as they grow older. Because, you know, when it's a toddler, when your kids are toddlers, I feel like you're probably teaching them all very similar things, worrying about very similar stuff.
Right.
And maybe as they age, it'll be different.
And I think personalities will express themselves differently. So you have different worries based on who that kid is and their dynamic and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So, I was thinking when you were talking about being worried for your theoretical daughters. My oldest, like, her personality is such that I am not very worried about. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, sure, like, anyone can be hurt, but she has such a strong personality that I almost, you know, worry for the other person more. Like, she's a tough kid. But I don't know. I mean, the baby could end up being different. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I got to teach all the kids, and like, we talk about it all the time. Like, your body is yours. You know, you don't, you got to, you're in charge. Every right. person is in charge of their own body. Like, I teach that repeatedly to both of the ones that are old enough to well, actually, the baby's starting to get old enough. So I'll try and teach that to all of them.
Yeah, I live in Arizona and my sister lives in Virginia, so I don't get to see you nearly as much as I want to. So I don't know your kids as much as I'd like to, but they're super fun. But Adele is the one I know the best because she's oldest, so I've seen her more, and she's just super funny and just super sweet, just a really interesting girl. Her voice just makes me crack up, just how she talks. It's hilarious. Like, my girls have funny voices, but compared to Adele, Adele's got a beat. It's amazing. But I wanted you to maybe share one crazy Adele story and one super sweet Adele story.
Please.
All right. There are plenty of both. In fact, like, today, I could tell, like, six of both that happened today. But one of my favorites of the crazy Adele is took place when – I'm already laughing – when we went to the mall play area one time. We went – my kids love going to the play areas at the mall. Like, we go just to the play area. I hate the mall. But anyway, so we go to the play area, and she's about four, so Colin is one or two. And so I'm spending a little more time focused on Colin, like getting him ready to run off and go play. And Adele's already off doing her own thing. I swear it's like 30 seconds that I've been with Colin, and somebody he's like, "Do you have a little girl that's there's a little girl that's naked?" Like, oh my God, that is definitely my child. And I went over this, like, round, I don't know, play thing that she says she's pretending it's a bathtub. That's what she tells me right away. She's like, "Mom, I was just pretending it was a bathtub and I was taking a bath."
Makes great sense.
Yeah.
I thought it was at Uncle Dave's, what's it called? Body wash.
Okay, yeah. Okay. No, she's actually learned a little more, I don't know, propriety, or she's gotten more shame since then. But that's what she's like, all id. That's what my husband often says. She just does whatever she feels like. So that's one of my favorite crazy Adele ones. Super nice. All the time. Like, today she wrote a nice note to her brother that said, "I love you, Colin." And then she helped him write one back to her that said, "I love you, Adele." So, make sure it's going both ways. And then she made a card for me tonight. That, let's see, it says, "I love you, Mommy." And on the inside it says, "I love you, Mommy, with all my heart."
Oh.
And then she drew a bunch of little hearts. She is, like, super sweet and super, basically everything she does 100% over the top, whatever. Whether she's being completely insane, crazy, or she's being really sweet. Like, you know, she's punched me in the face before, too. So, like, it goes both ways.
Well, one thing that we might talk about was postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And I know this is something that you've experienced with your kids, and from what I understand talking to you in the past, it was something you probably experienced very sharply with your first child, with Adele, and she worked on you. She had a lot of crying, I think some feeding issues, and she was your first kid, so that in itself is pretty stressful, I guess. what question should I ask to start this year still?
I don't know the situation, but how long did it take for you to recognize that what you were experiencing might be postpartum depression? Like,
so I was prepared for the possibility. I happened to right away, at least after a few days anyway, I noticed that something was up, but I didn't know if it was not normal. Because, you know, I think the statistic is something like 80% of women have some kind of baby blues.
Yeah. Right?
So I was expecting that. I wasn't expecting it to be quite as severe as it ended up being, but I'd never had a baby before, so I didn't know, what was normal and what wasn't normal. But I definitely, for the first, 3 weeks of Adele's life was, I would say, the darkest time in my life, even though I had a new baby, because I was thinking about this earlier today, and I remembered that, did you guys see that movie called Warm Bodies about the zombie that, like, through love turns into, like, a normal person again or something?
Wow. No, I haven't seen that, but it sounds heartbreaking.
It's a really pretty cool movie, but anyway, so in the movie, this guy, he starts off and he's got this internal monologue. So he's talking about how, like, he knew that he had a real life once, but he's trapped inside this body now and he has to do what zombies do, which is eat people. He doesn't really want to. He feels conflicted about it, but he knows that's what he's supposed to do, even though he has, like, this faint memory of a normal life. So, yeah, weirdly, I kind of felt that. I felt like I was just trapped in this body that was going through the motions. And that I had this, like, faint memory of what my life used to be like, but I wasn't able to, like, feel any feelings for a few weeks. Like, I didn't feel sad, I didn't feel happy, I didn't feel anything. Like, I remember playing a board game with my parents who came to visit, and normally, you know, there's, like, strategy, and there's, like, you want to win, and you're trying to stick it to the other person or whatever. But the whole time, I felt nothing, absolutely nothing. And it was the weirdest thing. I'd never experienced that before because our family's relatively competitive and you always want to win whatever. And I was just sitting there playing the game, like going through the motions. And so this was horrible. It was a terrible feeling, but I didn't know if it was gonna last. So it did actually get a lot better after 3 weeks. I remember telling Chris at some point, like, if this doesn't get better, this can't go on. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, definitely get on drugs, but I don't know if even that would be good enough. It got a lot better after that. And I slowly, like, started turning to some sort of normal. And so at that point, I thought, okay, I don't have it. You know, like, maybe I don't have it. Maybe I'm okay. Maybe that was just baby blues. Later, I realized that it got way less severe, but it was, you know, I was definitely depressed the whole time. And the only time that I really, really knew for sure that I had been depressed that whole time was when I wasn't anymore. And I think that happens a lot with people that have depression, is that you can only, especially postpartum depression, it's really a lot easier to see afterwards after you're out of it, because being depressed makes you not have a lot of energy, basically not have a lot of, like, expectations for yourself, because you just aren't thinking about that. You're just stuck in negative thought patterns over and over, and you just think, well, I guess that's just me. That's just what's happening right now. I just think about negative stuff, and that's just life. But so it's a lot easier to see once you get out of it and you feel positive again. I remember one time I went, like, she was over a year old. I went out for a run and I experienced at one point runner's high.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not that great, but I do run every once in a while. And so I came back from my run and I was like, holy crap. Like, that was like some kind of, like, euphoric feeling. And I haven't felt that since before the baby was born, maybe before I was pregnant even, not sure. That's when I knew for sure that, like, basically I'd been living my life muted, I would say, for years.
So how did this, I guess, complicate being a new mother? How did that affect just what you had to do for Adele?
I mean, I thought of it afterwards, and I thought to myself, if I could have changed anything about, like, my experience becoming a new mother, the first year of Adele's life, it would be to remove the postpartum depression. Because she was tough. She was a colicky baby. She so it was hard to, like, she would never stop crying. She just cried and cried and cried and cried. And she was never, I mean, unless she was asleep, then she was okay. And I had a really hard time learning to nurse. Like, it took months and months to, like, not totally suck at it. And if I would have just had, if I would have not been depressed, I would have been able to have, like, some sort of perspective on the whole thing. Like, where you can step back and say, okay, this sucks, but it's not forever. But when you're depressed, you don't have the "but it's not forever." Like, that doesn't come into your brain. It's like, this sucks, and it's just going to keep sucking, and life just sucks. And that's it. So that's definitely, so it definitely affected how I, and it, I think it affected, like, me bonding with her also. Mm-hmm. Although I've been, you know, like, people always say that the first moment they see their baby, they immediately feel connected to them. And I guess I did a little bit, but I didn't really feel, like, really connected and, like, I really loved my baby until she was probably, like, 4 months old. Hmm. And so I think I was starting to come out at that point just a little bit. And so, it definitely affected that. But I also, looking back, like, I see that I had a really hard time. Adele had a really hard time. We both had a hard time, and it kind of bonded us in a way.
And I wanted to ask Melissa, because it sounds, in some ways, I see a lot of similarities between what I observed in my wife's experience with our child and what you're describing. And I'm curious to know, like, with a baby that had difficulties, health and nursing and other things like that, how much of what you're identifying as postpartum depression do you feel was, like, purely biological or purely hormonal? And how much of it was a realistic response to a difficult situation?
That is really a really good question that's pretty impossible to answer, I think. I think there is a combination of everything. I think most of the time, my understanding is that when people get depressed, there are multiple causes. Like,
sure.
There's usually some stress setting it off, and there's also some, you know, brain chemicals or whatever, hormones and all that. So, yeah, I think it was everything. I also had kind of a rough delivery. It was just the perfect storm.
Yeah.
And that's probably why after it was, I think it was most severe with Adele. So, yeah, I think it was pronounced because of all the, just the difficulty of it.
Did it change how you prepared for your other two pregnancies? And were you nervous, or were you more fearful about what that first year was going to be like with your next kids?
With my second child, definitely. I wasn't sure. I was, you know, I was crossing my fingers it wouldn't happen again, but I knew that there was a pretty good chance. I mean, I think it's at least 50%, maybe greater, that if you have it once, you'll have, you know, you'll have it again. So I was definitely worried, but I was just kind of waiting to see what would happen. And I told myself I would act faster because I didn't really ever do anything about it with Adele. I just felt, because when you're depressed, it's hard to act. It's hard to do anything about it. But once I had, like, fully recognized it and come out of it, I kind of promised myself I will do something about it faster this time. And I did. So with my second child, I took antidepressants after a few months when I realized, yeah, this is depression again, even though it was actually different. Mm. I got really angry all the time. So it was a little different. It wasn't just like my life muted. I was just angry all the time. It was like I just had a really, really short fuse. Mm. Like and once I started taking the antidepressants, that was the change, that I had a much longer fuse. Like, I was able to deal with normal stress in a normal way. Yeah. So, and then by the time I got to my third child, I was like, dude, I have done this. I know what to do. I am not worried. I'm like, I'm gonna take the drugs. You know, I got this, and I know what I need to do, and I'm not, like, worried about the drugs anymore. You know, like, before I started taking antidepressants, I was like, oh no, is it gonna change my personality? Does it mean I'm a weak person? You know, all these worries. And this time I was like, yeah, this is what makes me a competent mother, and it makes me, you know, able to handle this and able to just be normal. So I'm going to do it. So, yeah. So for the third child, like, it helps that she is a super easy baby. Mm. But I feel like everything has been, like, so much easier. Like, even though, like, all three of our children, like, cried a lot at the beginning. I mean, the other two were not as bad as Adele, but they cried a fair amount. Like, and for the third child, I was just like, eh, whatever. She cries. She's a baby. So, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely. were you already taking antidepressants when you had your last baby with Glenn?
Yes. So I just kind of carried it right on through.
So the thing I was going to ask is, it sounds like it's a good situation in a way that, like, your symptoms sound really responsive to medication, which is the ideal, right? Like, if you're suffering from depression and the antidepressants make a difference, that's great.
Yep, that's right.
How do you decide, or do you have any fear about when are you going to decide to stop taking them, and how are you going to know, like, when the right time to, or do you, is that not a concern or worry for you right now?
It's not a huge concern for me right now. I did, so with Adele, I felt a huge difference after I stopped nursing her in my mood.
Yeah.
And so I thought that would be when I would stop taking the antidepressants with Colin. And so that's what I did, and I realized, nope, I wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready yet, so I started taking them again. So at this point, like, I don't know. Like, it's – like, I never had depression before I was pregnant, so it's definitely postpartum depression. But honestly, I don't know. It might be here to stay for the rest of my life. And if it is, I just got to deal with it and take the drugs. It's interesting. A lot of people have medical problems. A lot of people have – know, diabetes or whatever they have, and they live with it and they do what they got to do, and this might be what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, or I might try and go off and see what happens. I know there are other ways to fight depression too, and kind of, antidepressants are kind of like one of the laziest ways, but they work so well.
Right.
I can't help it. Go for it.
I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this before, sis, but I would talk to my wife about you a little bit. I mean, we live far away, but we talk pretty regularly. So I could feel the difference in you. I think once you finally started getting treatment for it at some point, I remember talking to my wife about you and saying, yeah, my sister has her personality back. It's back. It was gone for a while, but she's got it back now.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Do you have any advice, Melissa, for, I mean, I don't know how many female listeners we have, unfortunately, but I do think this is a super common thing, and I know that there's a general stigma about talking about mental health and depression generally, but what advice do you have for other women in a similar situation, or women who are either nervous about or scared of or feel like they might be experiencing postpartum depression? What kind of general lessons could you draw from your experience?
Well, I have talked to people in this situation. And I, for one thing, I think it's important to talk about this. I actually kind of suggested to Dave that we talk about this. I don't know if you guys have a lot of listeners, but because it is something that needs to be destigmatized, and it's not yet. I mean, a little bit more than it used to be. But I think one thing that I have told somebody is, if you have come back to the question, do I have postpartum depression, like, more than once, like a couple times? You probably do. I mean, maybe you don't, but it's not going to kill you to try and do something about it. So I think when you have it, especially the first time, I know, like, it feels like, well, it feels like everything you do is, like, ineffective. So you feel like, what's the point? You
right.
know, it's, I'm, so I don't, I guess, my, fight that is, I guess, my immediate advice is to, if you feel like it might be an issue, go for it. See what you can do about it. Even if it's just a mite in your mind, just find out. You know, don't sit there thinking, might be a problem. I'm just going to wait it out and see. Another thing I think is that parenting, motherhood, whatever, it's not the same for everyone. Like, if your experience is different than someone else's or different than all the parenting books you read, it's okay. I mean, that's another like big message I would want to send to people, because the fact that like it took me a long time to bond with my child, and the fact that like things were not automatic in any way, like anything was so hard, and I couldn't get that baby to stop crying. I thought, what, like, isn't this supposed to be an instinct? You know,
right?
Be
able to...
like, you know what? Sometimes it's a baby. It's different for everybody, and it's, as long as like the child is still alive and you're trying, it's, you're okay. But yeah,
that's such a good big picture perspective. And I think as a first time parent, that's so hard to have and hold that perspective in the moment of parenting, when you're like doing things for the first times and feeling like you're failing at it.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's so much easier to like, I feel like, it's like a boot camp. Like after just like 4 months or so of like having a newborn, you're ready to give all this advice to somebody.
Like, you're like, if I only knew then what I knew now, and you're only 4 months into it. But like, it feels like such an accelerated learning curve. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would just, I don't really talk about clinical or medical stuff much on here. But I would echo what my sister said regarding depression or any kind of mood disorder or mental disorder, is being active about it. Seek help from those around you, or seek medical help. Depression, if it's a clinical issue, if it's a postpartum depression, it's going to have a really hard time getting better on your own. It's not something that you need to do on your own. And that's what I usually talk to my patients about, is not trying to do it alone.
Hey, well, that's a perfect segue for one of my picks for Unchained Melodies.
But let's move on, because this week's segment of Unchained Melodies is sad songs. What do you got, Steve?
All right, Dave. I was thinking about depression. Depression is something that's haunted many of my loved ones. That's been an important part of the fabric of our lives, and it's something that I think about, that message of not being alone. And this is a song that I think about in relation to postpartum depression. And I was trying to pick songs that weren't just entirely depressing, because I usually do that. So these are sad songs that are somewhat hopeful or redemptive. And this was a song that Laurel sent to me. We would, you know, email and chat each other when we were first starting to get to know each other, before we were even dating, really. And she sent me this song, and I'd never heard it before. And I just... it made me weep, and it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. But I think there's a lot in this song about like imagining this as a response to someone who's battling severe depression. And this is a song by Patty Griffin, and it actually is called Not Alone. And we played it at our wedding as one of the – this was the first song we danced to together when we got married. So there's a sentimental attachment for me too.
That's beautiful, Steele. I just loved it. I guess I've probably heard that song before, but it's just emotional.
I had to recover. I'm glad you spoke first, because I got a little choked up. I'll be honest. The put out the fire in your head and lay with me tonight. That's like the That's the message. If you're the partner of someone who's struggling or hurting, like, that's all you can really do for them is say, you're not alone, I love you, and be with them in their suffering, you know?
Well, so the first one I want to play, I don't want to get into it, but I associate this song with the saddest day of my life. And I associate just listening to it a bunch of times. And, it just, I don't even know the lyrics. I just know the tune. It gave me some kind of catharsis, and it still does anytime I listen to it. But it's, Bon Iver, however you say it, for Emma.
I can never tell what Bon Iver is saying, but that was another beautiful song.
Yeah, I never know the exact lyrical content, but I feel like I know exactly what he's saying, even if I don't know the words. You know what I mean? You feel what he's saying.
he does. He just brings an emotion with just what he sings, how he sings. Yeah, I just was looking up the lyrics right now, and it made me feel even sadder. So maybe we don't need to know the lyrics.
That's a heartbreaking breakup song, right? Isn't it? And for this was like a breakup album for this girl named Emma, and then he goes to rural Wisconsin and records it all in winter. I'm living it.
Just a real uplifting song, uplifting album, uplifting concept.
Yeah.
Winter. I can bring up the next one.
Perfect.
So I always think of this song every winter, especially around winter solstice, because I've had some experience of winter depression, not a ton, but I do always think of this song every year. Like I'm always like humming it in my head or singing it, and but I like it because it talks about seasonal depression, but it's also, I think I also kind of went with Steele's idea of picking songs that have a little bit of hope in them too.
Nice.
I don't know. I'm pretty hopeful about the whole depression. So this is Fountains of Wayne, Valley Winter Song.
It's been falling off.
come to Wayne. That's they're the third best thing ever to come out of New Jersey. Number one being The Boss. Number two, Bon Jovi. Number three, Fountains of Wayne.
Little known fact, that's on the same record as Stacy's Mom, if you can believe that. Talk about two songs that are out of different veins.
They're a really great band. I've seen them a number of times, and the Stacy's Mom song, it's super catchy and got pretty irritating as time went on, but they're a great group of guys.
Lovely song. I think that was a great choice, Melissa. All right, so I've got another song that I think, for me, this is a song that I think of explicitly as being about depression and being written for people suffering from depression. And this is Noah and the Whale, and the song is called Blue Skies.
This might be the first time you've ever picked two songs on the same episode that I really like. Steel, you nailed it, buddy.
See, that's the thing, man. Songs that are counseling people not to be depressed rather than to be depressed. That's the secret to meeting Dave's approval. So this is an English band, and Laura Marling was briefly in there affiliated with this group, and they're really cool. I love the music, and this song just moves me terribly. Yeah, it's like an honest song about depression.
All right. Well, guys, I've got one by an artist with some history of mental illness. Beautiful song. Story of an Artist by Daniel Johnston. Perfect choice. What a great song. And it has everything I love, of course. It's poorly recorded. He's got just an odd voice. And well, that's really the only two things I love. So,
yeah.
It's a low bar to but it takes a special person to clear it to find their way into Dave's heart.
Yeah. Oh, so I guess I got the last one.
Please.
I thought of this song because, okay, so one night I was driving around in my car late at night. I think this was before I was even married, had kids, whatever. And I was listening to the public radio station. It wasn't NPR. It was like the local one, this like really leftist and they play weird things.
Nice. But
some kind of show about the mind at night or something. And they had Dar Williams on there. And she was talking about her experience with depression. And about how this song like chronicled it a little bit, and that what I really like is this in this song, I'm in just the right spot because the catharsis of this song happens like 3/4 of the way through, where she basically describes like the moment where she came out of it, the moment where she kind of arrived on the other side and had this experience where life was good again, life was okay, she felt like she was part of it again. I think probably a lot of people have had that experience, even if they haven't had, you know, actual depression, where you know, you have that moment, maybe you're out in nature, or you're or you're, when I was on my run and had my runner's high, like where you have that moment where you're like, oh yeah, life, I'm okay with this again, I like this.
Well, the sun rose with so many colors, it nearly broke my heart. I work me over like a work of art, and I was part of all that. So go ahead, push your luck, say what it is you gotta say. We will push on into that mystery, and it'll push right back. And there are worse things than that, 'cause for every price and every penance that I could think of, it's better to fall in love than never to fall in at all. When you live in a world, well, it gets into who you thought you'd be. And now I laugh at how the world changed me. I think life chose me after all.
That's a perfect way to close the Unchained Melodies on postpartum depression, coming out of it, having been changed and appreciative of both sorrow and of joy after at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed this entire segment. Let's do it again. Let's just do more. Yeah, let's just, every week. Let's just do a sadness section. It's so good.
I agree. That's what makes this show special. Remember, I was going to do This Week in Death with you and Katie?
We got to get her back. Talk more about death.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite episodes when you guys talked about death. That's pretty good.
See,
my sister does listen, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've listened to like a good like 8 maybe.
All right.
I got a little ominous note here. I walked into the studio and there's just a sheet of paper that's just printed with a single sentence on it. It's just a sheet of paper sitting here that just says, "Now we are getting into the meat!" Exclamation mark. I don't know what it means, but it seems vaguely about death.
Well, it seems like a great message to walk into. Like, it's very hopeful. Things are happening.
Okay.
So let's make this happen.
Let's get into the meat, Dave.
We're finally an hour and a half into the podcast. We're getting to the meat, and it's from my sister, and I think it's Frog and Toad. I'm excited.
right. I spent some time looking for just the perfect passage, and I was thinking about this one from Anna Karenina or Karenina, whatever you say that. And then I just read this story to Colin last night. He loved it, and I loved it too. I think it talks a little bit about so addiction, if we want to go that far. I'm talking about mental issues. All right, anyway, it's called Cookies. Toad makes some cookies. These cookies smell very good, said Toad. He ate one. They taste even better, he said. Toad ran to Frog's house. Frog, Frog, cried Toad, taste these cookies that I have made. Frog ate one of the cookies. These are the best cookies I have ever eaten, said Frog. Frog and Toad ate many cookies, one after another. You know, Toad, said Frog, with his mouth full, I think we should stop eating. We will soon be sick. You are right, said Toad. Let us eat one last cookie, and then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one last cookie. There were many cookies left in the bowl. Frog, said Toad, let us eat one very last cookie, and then we will stop. Frog and Toad ate one very last cookie. We must stop eating, cried Toad, as he ate another. Yes, said Frog, reaching for a cookie. We need willpower. What is willpower, asked Toad. Willpower is trying hard not to do something that you really want to do, said Frog. You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies, asked Toad. Right, said Frog. Frog put the cookies in a box. There, he said. Now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog tied some string around the box. There, he said. Now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog got a ladder. He put the box up on a high shelf. There, said Frog. Now we will not eat any more cookies. But we can climb the ladder and take the box down from the shelf and cut the string and open the box, said Toad. That is true, said Frog. Frog climbed the ladder and took the box down from the shelf. He cut the string and opened the box. Frog took the box outside. He shouted in a loud voice, Hey, birds, here are cookies. Birds came from everywhere. They picked up all the cookies in their beaks and flew away. Now we have no more cookies to eat, said Toad sadly. Not even one. Yes, said Frog, but we have lots and lots of willpower. You may keep it all, Frog, said Toad. I am going home now to bake a cake.
Toad is one of my all-time favorite literary characters. He's just an endless amount of comedy. Well, guys, the sadness has to come to an end. I guess it doesn't, but tonight it's going to. So, well, sis, I'm glad you could join me and Steele. It was an enjoyable time. We got to hear some of your expertise.
Yeah, I mean, experience at least. I don't know. It works, though. Yes. I was glad to be able to do it.
Me too.
Well, good night, Steele, and good night. I almost called you Melissa. See, when we were little, we always called her by her middle name, Sue. And then at some point, I just didn't feel like that was appropriate anymore. But I still never thought Melissa felt quite right either. So I just call her sis or sister, which feels correct.
It feels right from you.
Well, good night, sis. Doesn't it sound weird when I say it?
Yes, it sounds very weird.
Melissa, it was a pleasure. Thanks.
All right.
Me too.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
Yeah, sweet pictures of your nostrils, too.
Even better. All right.
Your lips look super well hydrated.
They're probably not, but I'm glad they appear that way.
Mine are just chapped to hell. It's winter in Wisconsin, so.
And then I'm hoping that my chapped area becomes better as spring approaches. So
oh, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. How's your anal itch?
Very persistent throughout the winter. Yeah, it's been a chronic problem for 20 years now, sis.
Wow. So that is the area you were referring to. That's awesome. Oh, that's rough.
Boom.
Get straight to the point. That is rough, Dave. In more ways than one.